allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Oh, may we have the changes to the agenda, please?
You have a couple of changes to today's agenda. Under closed session, you have an added item, number 9, Maria Vista Estates versus County of San Luis Obispo et al. This is case CV050242. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied, as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements. Under changes and amended items, under consent agenda item B13, the title of the cover sheet for item B13 is incorrect. The title needs to be amended to read, request from the administrative office to 1, approve an agreement with the private industry council to provide in-school youth, out-of-school youth, adult and dislocated worker program services, designating the private industry council as the Workforce Investment Act grant recipient and administrative entity for the county by extending the effective date to June 30th, 2006, and 3, require the private industry council as the administrative entity to enter into an agreement with the Atascadero Community Link to provide in-school youth program services, recommend approval, and instruct the chairperson to sign. Under amended hearing items, item C2 is a hearing to consider a request by resident-owned Parks, Inc. to 1, approve borrowing of funds by the Housing Authority of the City of San Luis Obispo to enable resident-owned Parks, Inc. to purchase the Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park, and 2, approve a related joint powers agreement, 2nd District. The recommendation was for your board to open the hearing and continue this item to August 23rd, 2005. Staff is requesting that the attached information be added to the staff report and that the recommendation be amended to read, recommend your board open the hearing and adopt a resolution approving the borrowing of funds by the Housing Authority of the City of San Luis Obispo. And that's your changes today.
Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to the public comment period. Let's see.
That's A1.
I have one request to speak form. The Reverend C. Hyde, please.
You want to do the presentation?
Those come after. No, they don't come after. We'll do the public comment. I only have one request to speak form, and then we'll do the presentation calendar. Eric.
Reverend C. Hyde, M.A. When I come before you, I'm coming before you to bring notice, because I believe that anything that happens within the borders of the County of San Luis Obispo, whether it be by the cities, by any enforcement within the cities, it's still within your jurisdiction, because you receive the Health and Human Services funds, and the condition for receiving these funds is that no one discriminate within the county. This is published in Santa Maria, where they are listening to their citizenry and they're holding workshops so they can create a positive attitude about disabled people, workshops that gather input for the community about what improvements need to be made instead of chastising disabled persons, stigmatizing them, making them afraid to stand up for themselves. The American on Disabilities Act, ADA, signed on July 26, 1990, is the federal law that recognizes and protects the rights of people with disabilities so that they can participate in all aspects of community life, or all aspects of life. And people might argue that an aspect of life might be being prosecuted and go to jail. But I don't agree with that. And I'm here today as the Central Coast representative of a national patient rights organization, and that is the Compassionate Coalition. This is a very large organization with many advisors and attorneys, and I believe I can be useful to this organization for one reason, and that is that I am a disabled person who suffers extreme pain, who has suffered medical malpractice from a potpourri of prescription drugs, and I do not currently use medical marijuana or any drugs. When I go to an emergency room, I will be offered barbiturates. I have to turn them down. I simply have conditions that won't allow myself to, I will not be able to physically function or mentally function, and that's just a condition that I have. The issue is that I have deep concerns The county has received funds for marijuana to it's a grant fund about marijuana. I don't want to say abatement. I'm not sure what the proper term was for this. And I'm real concerned about the county's indifference to the ADA, and are these funds being used to, and I use the word persecute, persons with medical conditions that have the misfortune to have medical conditions that have a physician's note that are within the statutes of the state of California, and that are very fearful right now because of the number of cases brought by the district attorney. Now, the Attorney General of California does provide the DA information about implementing the ADA, and that can be researched on county website and state websites. And it also provides information about the changes in the federal law and the stance of California on this. And I want to thank the Sheriff Department and the...
And your time is up.
Okay.
Thank you. Next speaker is Eric Greening.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening. The press recently covered a serious spill from the San Luis Obispo wastewater treatment plant. A very significant amount of raw sewage reached the ocean. Missing from the press coverage was any accounting of the impacts on the 8 miles of San Luis Obispo Creek that must also have been affected, or any indication of whether or how any agency was working to assess and try to remedy the likely damage to aquatic life, which could well include migrating and rearing steelhead. Whose responsibility is it to assess this damage? The city's biologist position is vacant. Most of the affected stream flows through the unincorporated area. While financial liability can probably be pinned on the city, to backfill costs borne by other agencies, it is other agencies, including the county, that have the resources to assess and try to devise some sort of restoration or restitution for this misfortune. Please agendize a public hearing with a status report on this spill as it has affected the creek and ocean, hosted by County Environmental Health, and invite appropriate representatives from the city, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the Land Conservancy, the Coastal Commission, the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District, and notify potentially interested organizations such as Surf Rider and Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. It is hard to say what a useful action might be until we know the extent and nature of the damage, but ignorance is not bliss. While I'm on the topic of the quality of the water flowing through our creeks and into the ocean, we are within 2 or 3 months of the likely date of our annual first flush phenomenon. This is when oil that has been dripping on the pavement for 7 or 8 months, all washes into the creeks at once with the first significant rain of the season. We need to agendize, probably as a separate discussion, an update on what information the county and other agencies are prepared to do, information that the gatherers will have to be ready to go out and get regardless of the today unanticipated date of the first significant rain. To understand the extent of this problem and to set up a timetable for its remediation, this is our clear responsibility under the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. You can't take a substantive action today, but in response to public comment, you can ask staff to agendize something, and I hope that you do. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments, Eric. We have one from Mr. Dugan. I think this is that yours is for public comment.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Now's the time.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos, Chairperson Bianchi, Board. I got two things to talk about. One is Moose Caps was on. Congressperson Moose Caps was on Deb Conklin last night talking about a $35 million grant that she's going to be getting for Los Osos, hopefully. And in the process, she said she didn't want to get on any side of the issue. But in saying that, she turns around and says, Los Osos has to speak with single-mindedness.
Excuse me, but we really don't discuss or make personal comments about other people.
Well, okay, then I'll just say that, I would ask that the chair, how would I phrase this then? If somebody was to say they're not going to be part of the issue, and then turn around and say, Los Osos should speak with single-mindedness, shouldn't that person at least say pre- or post-election single-mindedness? Is that person waving a $35 million grant in front of our noses, making us some person go, well, we need the money, so we need to vote against the recall or for the recall? That leads to confusion. I wish that would be clarified.
Well, probably by the time the $35 million is actually granted by Congress, authorized and voted on and granted, the recall will be over anyway. So that's a sort of a moot issue. Does that conclude your comments?
No, it does not.
Okay.
I need to know where this board stands on build-out in Los Osos. Is it prerequisite to reversal of trends of saltwater intrusion, the reversal of trends in the nitrate problems, the reversal of trends of the overdraft? Or is it just plans submitted? Is it just this wastewater project being built? From what I understand, this wastewater project is not a prerequisite to build-out. So it kind of confuses me when part of this board or some of this board or this whole board considers a build-out and a streamlining of 648 lots in the process of getting them built out, but somebody seems to be going against another project of only 33 homes. So I need to know where this board stands on build-out and the reversal of trends. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I've had several other requests to speak forms come in, so the next speaker is David White, can go to either microphone, followed by Dan Kirk at the other microphone. And there's a timer on the podium right there.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is David White, and I'm a resident of Santa Maria. And I would like to talk to you this morning briefly about the Guadalupe contaminated soil import to the Santa Maria landfill. On the 29th of July, there was a publication in the Santa Maria Times basically announcing the approval of that project by your planning commission. And I believe that there may be a disconnect in the public notice requirements required under the California Environmental Quality Act, in that as a citizen of Santa Barbara County and the city of Santa Maria, I do not believe that adequate notice was given to all of those actions in our jurisdiction as the recipient of those 800 plus thousand cubic yards of contaminated material. I believe that there is a need for an investigation. We have made requests of both Santa Barbara County and of your planning department for a listing of adequate notice within the jurisdiction of the County of Santa Barbara relative to this project. At this time, we haven't seen that, but I would like, before your board certifies that document, that you would ensure that adequate notice has been given. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Dan Kirk, followed by Thomas Gibbons. And if you could please come forward to the alternate microphone, then that saves us time. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Dan Kirk. I am also a resident of the city of Santa Maria and the county of Santa Barbara. I first read or heard about the transport of oil from San Luis Obispo County, contaminated oil sand, to our landfill by reading an article, not a notice, in the Santa Maria Times, and it came quite as quite a shock to find out that this was being proposed. I understand it's a great deal for San Luis Obispo County, and also for the transporter who will not have to take that stuff a greater distance. But I would ask, as the previous speaker indicated, that you look into or have your council look into the adequacy of CEQA notices. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Thomas Gibbons, and that concludes public comment.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is Thomas Gibbons, 3840 Fox and Canyon Road, on the east end of the valley of Santa Maria. I, too, would like to comment on the inadequacy and the problems associated with the EIR. I watched the paper religiously. I'm an environmental consultant by trade, and we watch our county closely. And there was no notification of the EIR, and in my research with county solid waste and transportation folks, I think they were quite overwhelmed by the number of truckloads and the fact that they didn't make adequate comment. I also called the local highway patrol office that had no knowledge of the project. So I think we stopped short of coming into the county with analysis, and I'd like to see the board not certify or recirculate the EIR for further comment. And I'd also would like to work closely with your staff to bring those issues to light and make sure that all the boxes are checked. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you for your comments. And these comments have been duly noted and will be pursued.
Thank you.
Thank you. That closes our public comment period, and so we will move on to the presentation calendar. Mr. Greek.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Richard Greek, Personnel Director. It's my pleasure, along with Mary York, to assist you in this tradition of recognizing employees who have served the county and the county's mission statement for a number of years. These are the folks that continue to help us make San Luis Obispo County government as good as it can be. We'd like to thank Risk Management and our staff and personnel for the support that they've also provided Mary and I. What we'll be doing this morning is announcing the names of those employees who indicated they would or might attend this morning, and we'll start with the 20-year pins. I would ask that the folks that are being recognized for 20 years come up. You're going to have to stand if you're the first called for a bit between the two podiums, because often there's a photo op at the end of the entire group being announced. With that, Kathy Solis with the Health Agency. Kim Merriman with Health Agency. Linda Foster, Health Agency. And Patty Verdugo, Health Agency. Fred Yett with Planning and Building. Arena Stara Dabuza, Planning and Building. Kim Murray, Planning and Building. We're going to have the whole staff here from two departments, aren't we?
And they can move over to the other podium over here and in the middle.
Nancy Apt. And if you would sort of stand up front between the two podiums, it'll make it easier to stage the photograph. Chris Clark, Probation. Lois Tobler, Probation. Terry Morgan, Probation. And John Bergmuller from Public Works, did he make it?
Yeah.
Yes, he did. And Gary Chiraliman from Probation. Okay, photo ops. Thank you very much. And I appreciate everyone lining up and being so well organized. We will now move to the 25-year celebrants. I would ask that the department head come to the left podium and the employee to the right podium. So will Harry Holden with the health agency come forward, and Dr. Thomas.
Good morning, members of the board. Good morning, Harry. Good morning. Greg Thomas from Public Health, Health Agency. Harry Holden has worked in the county's clinical lab for 25 years. He was hired as a clinical technologist when the lab was part of the hospital, and he did more than his share, I believe, of night shifts.
Yeah.
He remained in the clinical lab as it evolved from being part of an inpatient service to the full-service outpatient clinical lab it is today. Harry not only serves the community of San Luis Obispo through his work as a clinical scientist, but also stays involved with his church and the Boy Scouts of America. As long as Harry remains a Boy Scout leader, we will know what the weekend weather is. If he's taking a troop camping, it's sure to rain.
It's going to rain.
It's going to rain. His rise to senior technologist is mirrored in his personal life as a leader in both of these organizations. He's also set a high standard of performance, only calling in sick twice, 2 days during his last 25 years. Those of us who have worked with Harry know that he has a large sick leave balance and have seen him grow professionally and personally. He's earned a master's degree in business and worked for a local clinical controls company that recently went national. He was as valued there as he is with the county, so much so that they asked him to come back as a consultant now and then. He's generous with his knowledge and enjoys sharing life experience with his coworkers. 25 years ago, his break time conversation were of starting a family. Today they are of how he helped plan his daughter's wedding and where his son is stationed with the Marines. Currently, he's taking an active role in helping train new clinical lab assistants. His consistent manner in teaching ensures that new employees learn what is necessary to become part of a fast-paced team. He is one of only two special chemists at the clinical lab, which means he puts in an extra mile to keep the lab's clinical lab running, providing timely and accurate results to our customers. Harry was here when I arrived to work for the county in 1988. He's been a knowledgeable source of information for me as a clinician and has always done that in a cooperative and helpful manner. And he's well known among many of the clinicians who call in for help on laboratory issues. So, Harry, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Say a few words, if you please.
The only thing I'd like to say is I've enjoyed working here, and I appreciate y'all giving me a job so I could afford my daughter's wedding.
Our next 25-year celebrant will be Brent Scheffler, and will Kim Barrett come forward from probation?
Good morning, Chairwoman Bianchi, members of the board. Kim Barrett, Chief Probation Officer. Good morning, Brent.
Morning.
Brent was first hired in March of 1980 as a counselor at our juvenile hall. A year later, he was promoted to Deputy Probation Officer. During the next several years, Brent worked on a variety of assignments and has always excelled in all of them. In 1991, Brent became one of the department's first two armed officers. Since then, he developed the department's entire firearms program, and it is a model by which other departments model their programs. In 1998, Brent was promoted to supervisor and was appointed as the department's training officer. Brent's tenure as the departmental training officer was particularly important to us. He brought the department's training up to Board of Corrections standards, as the department had been out of STC training for a number of years. To illustrate abilities as a trainer, Brent often did training on his own. I'd like to give you an example of his dedication. Brent was once training new probation officers in the use of our new drug testing strips that test urine for traces of drug use. Brent brought in a sample to the class. He talked at length about the need not to come in contact with the sample due to the health hazards and how to actually test the sample with the new test strips. At the conclusion of the demonstration, he told the class that they had to carefully dispose of the remaining sample. To demonstrate the proper way to accomplish this, Brent very carefully picked up the cup and promptly drank the entire contents. After the commotion settled down, Brent explained that the example had actually been Mountain Dew. That was nice of him. That class never forgot. In 2002, with passage of Prop 36, the department needed a supervisor to start this complex new program. Brent stepped forward and took the challenge on. This program has received excellent reviews from all who have worked in the program and statewide. This success is due to Brent's ability to problem solve, to work with other agencies, the court, and to work so successfully with his staff. In reviewing his personnel file, I found many letters of thanks and appreciation from community members, schools, law enforcement, and other county agencies, thanking Brent for his dedication, abilities, and compassion shown to others. It is my pleasure to present you this service award for 25 years of outstanding service to the probation department. Thank you, Brent. Thank you.
I'd like to thank the board for the recognition and Kim Baird for the kind comments. When I started work for the probation department in 1980, we didn't have our own juvenile hall, and I worked out of a mobile home located near General Hospital. One of my earliest memories there was trying to deal with this very angry father whose son was in custody, and despite my best efforts, the man kept becoming angrier and more hostile and belligerent. My partner, fearing that there was going to be violence, called Slo PD for assistance. And in a few minutes, an officer showed up and walked up in back of this man who was still real belligerent and loud. There was just no calming him down. In a minute or so, the man realized the presence in back of him. He realized somebody else was in the room. He turned around, and in back of him, he saw Officer Jerry Lenthal standing there. Immediately, he became a model citizen. It was truly amazing police work. I don't think Officer Lenthal said a word. He took, so that was amazing police work. I can't say enough about my fellow supervisors, the staff, and the management team at the probation department. I really enjoy working there. I've had a great career at the probation department. I also like to give a special thanks to Assistant Chief Martin Aleppa and Chief Kim Barrett. I think they've been great leaders, and I think they've taken the department a long way. They've had great wisdom. Currently, I'm assigned to the Prop 36 and Drug Court program, and I've really gained appreciation for the hard work the counselors do. They're kind of the unsung heroes in the system. So I'd like to acknowledge the counselors in Drug Court and the counselors in Prop 36 program. They do really a selfless work, and they don't get a lot of recognition for it. Excuse me for being a little voice. I've got a little allergy today. So, in closing, I'd just like to say I really enjoyed working for the county. I've had a wonderful career here, and thank you very much.
Our next individual is from public.
Just a minute, Mr. Lenthal, supervisor.
I was going to make one comment that if you looked at Brent's personnel file, there are a couple of commendations that I wrote for the good work that this person's done in probation. And I guess I'm thankful that he was teasing me or making me feel good. But the thing is people like Brent compliment law enforcement, and probation are the unsung heroes that do a lot of the behind-the-scenes work that put people in custody, that keep people on probation from getting in trouble again. And that is a great probation officer right there.
Mr. Greig.
Okay. Our next individual is from Public Works, Tom Spring. Will you please come forward? And Noel King.
Good morning, board members. Noel King, Public Works Director. I'm pleased to tell you a little bit about Tom Spring, for those of you that don't really know him. Tom began work with the county as a stock clerk for our department on June 24, 1980, and a few years after that, he was promoted to senior storekeeper. Tom's current job responsibilities include reviewing material and equipment requests from various Public Works operating staff and determine the best product pricing, quality, and supply sources for those items. He also generates purchase requisitions and evaluates orders and shipments as to timely delivery, quantity, and quality. With the implementation of the new SAP accounting system this year, he's responsible for maintaining a complex multi-budget unit cost accounting and materials inventory system to ensure accurate cost allocations, inventory levels, and inventory reports. Tom made the transition to the new system with a minimum of problems and kept the warehouse running during the process. Tom's supervisors have documented in his performance evaluations that he is dependable, requires very little supervision, keeps the warehouse neat, maintains accurate inventory control, and is very knowledgeable of the products that are stocked there. I know that many times over the past 25 years that Tom's worked for us, he's had to come into the warehouse in evening hours or weekend hours when some sort of an emergency, such as storm damage or something, was going on. So he's worked a lot of off hours. Whenever an emergency arises, he's the guy with the keys to the warehouse, so he's the guy that's called out there. Away from work, Tom's a pretty interesting guy. He's a very fine artist. He's won many prizes for his paintings at the county fair. He's also done a lot of comic caricatures that are pretty humorous but not usually fit for mixed company to look at. He volunteers many hours every year coaching girls softball, even though his own daughters are now grown and too old to be doing that. Prior to that, Tom was a fine youth baseball coach for over 10 years. Although he kind of disappointed me today with the way he's dressed, he has an obsession for wearing Notre Dame University clothing that his wife Terry hasn't been able to get a grip on yet with him. And lastly, Tom's a San Luis Obispo native. He knows the history in this city, and he knows everybody in town, and that makes him a key information and gossip source for me. Whenever I need to know something about somebody, he's the guy I go to. We greatly appreciate Tom's 25 years of service in the Public Works Department and wish him many more years of good work with us.
Thank all of you for this, Noel and all my bosses, and for the thanks to the citizens of the county.
As we move into the 30 years, I would like to request that the department head come to the left podium and the employee to the right podium to assist in the process. Ms. Bianchi.
Thank you. Would Jude Long please come forward, and Brian Reynolds? And I get to read this. That's one of the pleasures, I should say, of being chair. This is Jude Long in the library, Morro Bay. In every culture and tradition, there are people who bring out the best in others by the example of a strong moral compass. Jude Sanner Long is one of these people. Her agenda is clear: to do what is best for all concerned with equanimity. Jude describes herself as an early library lover who remembers the day she first learned to read. Jude moved to the Central Coast in 1973 after graduating from Eastern Illinois University. In 1975, she accepted a position as a part-time clerk at the Morro Bay Library, and in 1980, she was promoted to librarian. When plans for a new library arose, She worked closely with the Morro Bay Friends of the Library and the county to make a dream become a reality with the opening of the Morro Bay Library in 1985. Jude has shown herself to be an advocate for youth and a leader with vision who has worked to meet the changing needs of libraries and the community at large. She has weathered transitions into three different computer systems with grace. She has encouraged and trained her staff, volunteers, and co-workers with humor and patience. Jude recently served as project manager for the library's conversion from using a leased book plan to a standing order plan for popular fiction. Presently, she is in the process of a major makeover of the Morro Bay Library, which will serve as a model for the future of library service throughout the county. What Jude's accomplishments on paper don't convey is the professional way she leads her staff, yet with a nod and a wink, slyly tickles your funny bone. No one winks like Jude. Balancing the needs of her community, her staff, and the health of the planet, Jude is a library manager with strength, wisdom, and a vision for the future. And now we'll hear from Brian Reynolds.
It's an honor to be here today. When I first came to this county about 12 years ago, I was able to get to know all the communities and all the branch managers, and Jude was truly a star at that time, and over the years has provided exemplary service, helped keep me on track with her calm demeanor. So I greatly appreciate her, and for me, she's a model of what a great library manager should be.
And you may say a few words if you wish, or a lot of words if you wish.
I do have a few words. Thank you so much. I want to thank the crew that I work with. My team is made up of Mary, Beth Ann, Michelle, Beth, and Linda, and they're the greatest. And thank the Friends of the Library in Morro Bay and all of our volunteers and all of library administration, branch managers, and staff. It's been a fun roller coaster journey for libraries. I also want to acknowledge two departments, Personnel Department and General Services, because we couldn't do our jobs without you, and we appreciate especially those two departments. So what's happening at the Morro Bay Library? Everything's flying off the shelf. The DVDs, the books on CD, the internets are always busy. We still have print books. You remember those? They're bigger than ever, and customers are using us 24 hours a day from their home. That's a lot of progress. People depend on that. Why did I go into the library profession? Because it's a huge recycling center that welcomes all ages and all income levels, that offers free information, free knowledge, a pathway to learning, free fun and enjoyment and enrichment of our lives. And libraries offer this to everyone. Libraries are the great equalizer of our society. But this 30-year recognition is really about the past. And currently in Morro Bay, we're looking to our future. How can our library look different and act different? How can we transform our services in order to attract future generations? Picture an exciting, colorful, welcoming building that's people-friendly, where staff interact out on the floor rather than behind a long, big desk, where there are a lot of comfortable chairs, different shapes and different sizes. This is the community's living room. This is a public library. So expect some big changes in Morro Bay, and we will get our library makeover in December. Please come to our grand reopening early next year to see the results, And I want to thank each and every one of you for all of your support of libraries countywide. And thank you again for inviting me here. Thanks.
Thank you. Would Chuck Stevenson come to the left podium and Victor Holanda to the, well, I'm not sure whether it's left or right from your direction. Thank you.
Pick one.
This is Chuck Stevenson. After graduating from Cal Poly, Chuck Stevenson began his career with the county in 1974. He initially was hired, as most new planners, to work on day-to-day land use applications. In 1985, through his concern for the visual appearance and well-being of unincorporated communities, he helped create and initiate the ever-popular Code Enforcement Unit. As a result, that unit has become one of the mainstays and enforcers of community values throughout the county. Because of that unit's success, several jurisdictions throughout the state have duplicated the processes and procedures used here in SLO County. Chuck is currently a supervising planner in the Long Range Planning Division, where he is primarily responsible for the creation and development of community plans. Some of his major accomplishments over the past 30 years, which have made a definite impact on improving land use planning in the county, have been updating the county general plan. Through his efforts working with community leaders, he has provided professional guidance in planning the future of their communities. These efforts have resulted in ag preservation, new housing, better traffic circulation planning, and environmental protection. Another point is staff liaison to community advisory councils. His efforts have resulted in positive working relationships with advisory councils, but also completion of major planning efforts in unincorporated communities such as Napomo and Cambria. He's had success in applying for and receiving grant funds. Through his persistence and tireless efforts, Chuck has been able to apply for and receive grants for Napomo's downtown design and circulation plan. These efforts have resulted in an economic revitalization of the Old Town area of Napomo, and also in initiating and recommending smart growth principles. Chuck led the initiative for the county to consider new and innovative ways to approach planning. In June of this year, the board endorsed smart growth principles, which launches a new era of community-based planning. In recognition for Chuck's professional efforts, he has been the recipient of a few awards. One most notable is the Key to the City, the Future City of Napomo, from the Old Town Napomo Association. Well, that's thinking positively. An Excellence in Planning Award for the Old Town Napomo Design Plan from the American Planning Association. An Award of Excellence for the Santa Margarita Downtown Design Plan from the American Planning Association. Chuck continues to provide community service through serving on Cal Poly's Academic Advisory Committee for the City and Regional Planning Curriculum, as well as being a regular guest lecturer to the City and Regional Planning classes. Over the past 30 years, Chuck has shown a passion for good planning by his continued efforts by working with community leaders, appointed and elected officials, his fellow planners, and engineering professionals, but most important, the citizens of the communities he serves. So, Mr. Holanda.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. It is a pleasure in recognizing Chuck this morning. As you just indicated, his career has spanned 30 wonderful years of dedication to the general public. The recognition by the American Planning Association for his planning, his dedication to the Cal Poly students, if you will, in encouraging those folks to take on the career of planning. You mentioned earlier the code enforcement issue. That was a challenge back quite a few years ago, and it took some internal fortitude, if you will,
to even initiate a concept like that. And as you can see, we have definitely gained a lot in this county by a very proactive code enforcement unit. But most importantly, Chuck is one of those individuals who the fellow planners in our department look up to. He's a leader. He's a mentor. He is a dedicated professional. He believes in good community planning. And this county is very grateful and benefiting from his talents. And with that, I want to congratulate Chuck for his efforts.
First of all, thank you very much for the kind words. I appreciate it. It's been really a great career. Planning is always at the center of controversy. Your meetings every week are full of our items that they contain a lot of issues where people are on both sides of the question. I've enjoyed particularly working with community groups, with developers, with you as decision makers, both Planning Commission and yourself, in helping to shape and implement your vision. The community has been gratifying for me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to have worked here. We have a great department, great young staff that you can be proud of. We face challenges. Obviously, we have regional growth pressures that we're now going to be dealing with in the in the next coming years. We have the problem of affordable workforce housing that we're going to be dealing with. So I'm excited about the opportunity to meet those challenges head on and look forward to that opportunity. Thank you very much.
No, I remember going into Chuck's office one time years and years ago when he was with code enforcement, and he had a corkboard type thing behind his desk, and it was labeled, it was a map of the county, and he had little red push pins, and it was, you know, close encounters of the worst kind. And unfortunately, one of the clusters was up one of the canyons in Cambria. But I knew who he was talking about. So would Doug Morris please come to the microphone, and Mr. Hollanda. Doug Morris began his career with the county on January 6, 1975. He graduated from Cal Poly with a degree in architecture in 1969. After working for a local architect for 3 years, Doug was hired by the county as a project coordinator in the General Services Department. he was responsible for overseeing projects such as the animal control facilities, El Choro, and Chalk Mountain golf courses. In 1985, he transferred to the Planning and Building Department as a construction plans plan checker, where he reviewed residential, commercial, and industrial construction plans before building permits could be issued. In 1990, he became the assistant building official in charge of the whole plan review section within the Building Inspection Division. Some of his major accomplishments, which have made a definite impact on improving customer service over the years, have been, first, concurrent permit processing. This has reduced permit processing times from 8 weeks to 4 weeks, saving time and money for the applicants. And development of automated plan correction checklist. Applicants are able to access electronic version of the plan checklist on the department's webpage. This process improves the accuracy of plans for the applicant prior to plan submittal. And creation of building status and weekly reports. This system identifies all building permits within the county by precise locations. As a result, this information is used by the general public, other county departments, contractors, lending institutions, as well as numerous other agencies. And creation of staff productivity reports. These reports develop data and information in order for all employees within the plan checking section to improve work efficiencies and cost savings. And influence the creation of a career series for permit process and plan review. This innovative idea has helped in staff morale and motivation, employee retention, as well as new career opportunities for employees. And improved customer service through common sense interpretation of building codes. Through his leadership and mentoring, he has fostered a more proactive customer service delivery system through what he calls intent of the building codes approach to solutions. Doug has provided 30 years of meaningful and rewarding public and customer service. Mr. Holanda.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is a pleasure recognizing Doug this morning. And as you just indicated, I think the underlying theme here is that he is a dedicated professional. One of the things that he has really emphasized in the department is that he does care for the staff. He believes in customer service, and he believes in efficiencies, but most of all, accountability of anyone and everyone, whether it be the customers that serve us or the staff that work with Doug. I think through the years, he has come up with several ideas with the help of his staff to streamline the process, to save the county money, to help the customer. And again, as you indicated in the latter part of your talk there, he looks at the common sense approach and the intent of the building codes to assist the consumer, if you will, in getting through the red tape process. And I think this is what's expected by county employees, especially in the building inspection division and plan check division. I think that the number of complaints, if you will, have literally diminished to zero with our plan checking because of their customer service-oriented abilities. And I think that's something we should all be proud of, that they do provide an excellent service. And again, it's through Doug's leadership that the department has been extremely successful. And with that, I want to congratulate Doug for 30 years of fantastic service.
Basically, I just say thank you very much. I think when I left General Services, it was like jumping from the frying pan to the fire. I saw a lot more people, and I enjoyed that part of just serving a lot of customers and getting people through the process. And basically, I can just owe that thanks to the administrative staff, the permit technicians, the plans examiners, the planners, and our department management, and our director, Vic Olanda, for just supporting us in carrying out all these difficult and complex regulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, that concludes our presentations, but I would also like to thank Mary York and Richard Grieg for having the foresight to bring a second copy of what I'm supposed to read down here.
Where's the first copy?
I have no idea where it is. With that, we will move on to our consent agenda. If folks in the audience could leave quietly, please. We have to complete our morning agenda. I have some request to speak forms on the consent agenda. The first person is the Reverend C. Height, followed by Eric Greeny. If someone could close those doors in the back, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend C. Hyde, M.A. This is a clear request for accommodation under 49 CFR section 37.5 by the ADA safety net. Don't place this membership at risk. Don't approve B12. Acceptance of an award from the State Department of Health Services Vector-Borne Disease Section to enhance and expand mosquito control in the county. Budget adjustment, $172,649. $10,000 for the ULV sprayer. Authorized budget modifications pursuant to the provision of the award. There was overwhelming opposition on this issue at public hearing, and yet this grant was applied for to circumvent 20% of your citizenry who have the misfortune to be handicapped by medical conditions and the public stigma that accompanies disability. I am providing you a dictionary definition to consider. A deception deliberately practiced in order to secure unfair and unlawful gain. A piece of trickery, a trick, a cheat. A deception carried out for the purpose of achieving personal gain while causing injury to another party. And that's the definition of fraud. Turning out again and again with a class action suit numbers to educate and express our concern without first hiring an attorney and bringing suit didn't work, and you just proved that today. It is now reasonable to believe that persons handicapped by medical conditions can no longer trust their health and safety to the County of San Luis Obispo. It does not accommodate persons handicapped by medical conditions to go through the exhaustive process of a class action suit to prove that they are not invisible, that they are not unworthy of representation, and that they are worthy of reasonable and acceptable risks regarding their health and safety. In other words, you can't place this burden on disabled persons with only speculation that will prevent illness in an otherwise unaffected population. And as late as August the 4th, an adulticide, a spray used against adult insects, is the least effective last resort and almost never used in SLO County. Now, I've provided you information on disability accommodation in Santa Maria, and also there's information on the West Nile virus. You've had time to look over that. And information, a statement from the EPA website about preventing asthma attacks. Now, you have all the information, and yet someone applied for this grant. And I'd like to say that as far as researching code and freely providing this information to you, if the county didn't want me to be considered credible as a disability advocate, then they shouldn't have used my personal advocacy in a criminal case file against my own client. It certainly qualified me as a researcher of code on humane education and disability issues, and I would like you to consider what you've already heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Greening, followed by Greg LeVay.
I'm Eric Greening. In the past, whenever people have come and spoken with concern about the county's West Nile program and raised concerns about being sprayed, we've been told this isn't about spraying. Spraying's only a last resort. We have a prevention and public education program, and if these are successful, we won't have to spray. That's why I'm very taken aback to find that our department, health department, has applied for a grant which it is absolutely forbidden to use for any sort of prevention or public education, and which it is required to use for abatement. In other words, whatever the success of prevention and public education efforts, this money will be burning a hole in your pockets unless spraying takes place. Questions raised include the following. Given that Laguna Lake, Pismo Lake, the Oceano Lagoon, and the Morro Bay Estuary are all in windy areas, what is the maximum wind speed at which aerial larvicide application will be allowed? What is the potential for drift at that wind speed? Given that the last three sites mentioned are new and are ecologically sensitive areas in the coastal zone, what, if any, consultation with the Coastal Commission has taken place or will take place? The Canaries Foundation is requesting that this money be used for non-toxic control measures such as bug zappers and bat houses. Do the terms of this grant allow for the funds to be used on such alternative abatement strategies? If this is approved as written, the health department will, in the event of a public health emergency, have direct control of two adulticide sprayer trucks. What will constitute a public health emergency? Will the mere failure to reach anticipated kill ratios with larvicide constitute such an emergency? How much warning will residents of areas to be sprayed with adulticides be given? How will any of this funding be available for relocation assistance for the sensitive or as compensation for lost access to homes and businesses? If not, what will be the source of such funding, or do you intend to provide no such compensation? While this looks like free money, all it will take to blast a hole in county finances is one successful lawsuit against the county from a victim of the spraying this grant will purchase. If you accept this grant, you increase your liability because you will have demonstrated by this action intent to spray not as a last resort, but as a routine. Please take no action this week and set this for hearing at the nearest opportunity so that all questions and concerns can be answered and addressed. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. Greg LeVay, and that's my last request to speak form on consent. Mr. LeVay.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and Board of Supervisors. I'm Greg LeVay, a resident of San Luis Obispo in the Laguna Lake subdivision. And I would also like you to see B12 set aside. Most of my family members are attorneys, my father-in-law, my daughter-in-law, and about a dozen other family members. Myself, as an executive, have written and signed over 100 Fortune 500 contracts, so I know a little bit about attorneys and law. And I know that when attorneys look at lawsuits they think they would like to take on and win, they like to see a few certain elements. Number one, they like to see, they like to have clients with unrecoverable lifelong damage and damaging illnesses. Number two, they like to see a pattern of abuse and deniability and disregard for their clients' welfare by the people that have caused the problem. Number three, attorneys like to see intent, clear intent, that seems to disregard the plaintiff's, the client's right. Number four, they like to see legal precedents, similar cases where other people have sued and have been awarded major awards. When trial attorney sees these four elements, he or she knows they have an easily winnable case. And I think that's what we have here, unfortunately. Number one, we seem to have a pattern of legislative and county management abuse that has allowed pesticides to ruin the lives of hundreds of SLO families, in some cases tragically. Number two, we have an immunity disease that cannot be fixed, cannot be repaired, and damages people and entire families for their entire life. Number three, we have a public outcry that has gone unheeded, and even when safe alternatives are available, even when the County of Santa Barbara and the County of San Francisco have gone a totally different direction, okay, our next door neighbors, by the way. Four, we have clear intent, as potentially demonstrated by B12 if we vote on it today. And lastly, we have hundreds of successful lawsuits around the country from similar situations where the defendant has won and has been awarded huge awards. So I would like to recommend that we stop this. Secondly, I would like to politely ask that anyone with a horse ranch recuse themselves from voting on this because of serious conflicts of interest. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing none, I will bring it back to the board. Are there any items you would wish to pull, Mr. Ovid?
No, Madam Chair.
Oh, excuse me for being nonplussed, but the names on my thing here have been changed. So, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to pull item B12, please.
I have to retranslate. Excuse me. You want to pull B12?
Yes, for questions. Thank you. Of staff.
Mr. Lenthal?
No, Madam Chair.
Mr. Shajan?
Not at this time.
Okay, and I would have pulled B12 for comment from our public health officer, and I don't think anybody up here has a horse ranch.
Not anymore.
The mules used to be. Shetland ponies used to be, but none now.
Good morning. members of the board. The Public Health Department was notified July 5th that the governor had approved anticipated funding to enhance and expand local mosquito control efforts in areas that had inadequate mosquito eradication programs and applications. So we were notified on July 5th. Applications were due on July 15th, and we were notified by the state that we were awarded the $172,000 on July 25th. This is, if you know the state, this is the state moving at its unusual speed for its typical glacial speed that it moves. And this is in recognition of the urgency of West Nile virus around the state. There is $10,000 that of this funding that is dedicated to purchasing an ultra-low volume sprayer so that in the event that we have to use adulticides, we will have the capacity. It is not something that I want to do. It's something that Sacramento is doing when they went from having two cases in 1 week to having 23. So there were areas where based on 21 cases in 1 week and the possibility of a significant increase over a very short period of time, that they are going to that. Now, the rest of this funding is for larvicide use, and the larvicide that we have been using is Bacillus thuringiensis, as we've talked about at this hearing, a natural product that is used by organic farmers that you can still go ahead and sell your produce. Very specific for mosquito larvas. We can't do that without product. We can't do that without some augmentation of staff. And so this is an augmentation to our three limited term employees that would provide two additional temp help individuals plus the ability to have more product and have more applications in areas such as Laguna Lake. And if you would like to see a graph of the reduction in mosquito population in around Laguna Lake, I think it'd be helpful to put that up. Unfortunately, I am technologically challenged in regards to this machine. That the use of that larvicide has taken the mosquito population to a several log reduction. So the piece of paper is, I'll read it since you see it on your screens and I'm having a hard time reading it, but it was a count around 1,600 down below 200 in an evening of trapping around Laguna Lake, and it has stayed down, we want to keep it down. So any other questions? Steve Carnes is the supervisor in environmental health who is supervising this program, and I guess I would say what are the criteria under which we would consider adulticiding? It would be the combination of positive mosquito pools and a significant number of human cases in an area that was amenable to adulticiding. Given that all our other strategies had not worked, it's something I don't want to have to do if we possibly can get away with it. Public use of preventive measures using DEET, staying out of mosquito areas during dawn and dusk, and using long pants, long shirts, doing what they can do in their own environment, in their backyards, to prevent the use, to prevent mosquito habitat, is effective strategies that will reduce the number of cases. Notification would be at least 48 hours, more likely 72 hours. If not more. And otherwise, I'm open to any questions.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Thomas, one of the issues raised, and you partially answered that just now, is notification of people in the event that you do decide to use adulticides. What does that consist of? How will people know that you are going to, or that you're considering the use of adulticides?
Madam Chair, members of the board, Steve Carnes, County Environmental Health. What we do in the one and only aerial application that we're making right now is at Laguna Lake. We do hand-deliver door-to-door notices to the residents affected by the immediate vicinity of the lake and the treatment. Adulticiding would be probably a longer period of time. We're doing 2, 3, 4 days. We do have the 5 or so chemically sensitive registered people. We give them a week's notice, and this could, of course, be expanded to a week and 2 weeks if need be, if we had that much lead time.
So you do maintain the chemical sensitivity register?
It's actually maintained by the Ag Department. In cooperation with the Ag Department, we do look through it, check it out, find out what areas we would have to address, and look for the residents in those areas that are on that registry.
Can this grant also be used for other control measures like non-toxic control measures like bat houses or the mosquito zappers?
Yeah, absolutely. As long as it has to do with mosquito control or mosquito abatement, those are all allowable uses.
Okay. Does it free up any county funds that have been budgeted for use for public outreach and education?
No, it does not. In fact, it's specifically prohibited from doing that.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thank you. More comments, or does that conclude your comments?
That concludes my comments, unless there are further questions.
Mr. Ovid.
I was just going to make a motion.
Second.
Well, I was going to make a comment.
I'll yield to the comment.
Thank you. No, we had occasion to be in Modesto this past weekend, and yes, it was extraordinarily hot. However, because it was so hot, we were inside, and I was reading the Modesto Bee, and there was an article on a gentleman in Modesto that just about didn't make it from a case of West Nile virus. He was in ICU for something like 10 days. He was desperately ill, and as Mr. LeVay was speaking, it occurred to me that if we did nothing, if we didn't try larvicides, if we didn't try any methods at all to control the mosquitoes, wouldn't that put us in a very bad spot for dereliction of duty? This is a situation where we have difficulties with people who are chemically sensitive. They need to register with the agricultural department if they are. If they have not registered, they will receive the regular public notice, but they won't receive the 1 or 2 week prior notice. So I'm going to support this because I believe it's absolutely vital we control the mosquitoes. Mr. Ovid.
Yeah, move consent calendar plus amendments. Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, we are going to take a 15-minute break and return at 10:30. And we will see you then. The Board of Supervisors is back in session. I have one request before we have an introduction to item C1. And the request was to announce the phone number at the Ag Department where one can register if you are chemically sensitive. And that number is 781-5910. And if you're running around frantically looking for a pencil, if you're home, and a piece of paper to write it on, I hope you have the pencil by this time because the number is 781-5910. And I'll repeat it again at 2 o'clock if we come back then. Thank you. May we have an introduction of item C1, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Rosemary Carlin of the Subdivision Review Board's decision to approve 10 conditional certificates of compliance, C030416 and S030174C, Rosemary Carlin et al., for property located along Honey Grove Lane between Story and Southland Streets in the community of Napomo in the 4th District. Recommendation is to continue this item to October 18th.
Yes, may we have a staff?
Staff is here to answer any questions that you might have. Otherwise, I will see you October 18th.
Okay. Do we need a...
I'll make that motion as long as... has everybody else been notified, the neighborhood?
I do have a map and a list of everyone who is notified if you'd like to see it. But yes.
Okay, Madam Chair, and if I may ask you to see, has anybody in the audience come here today to address this issue? We have one gentleman probably wants to speak.
Would you come forward, please?
My name's Raymond Watson at 731 Honey Grove Lane.
Okay, you have 3 minutes, and the timer's on your podium.
Okay, well, I wasn't expected, but I'm not sure I understand this. As I understand, the application is to make 10 lots of this area, and all the houses on our street, which is almost completely full, are half-acre lots with houses set back a great deal, maybe 100 feet, and to take this small section, the last end of the street, and turn it into 10,000 square foot lots would change the whole complexion of the neighborhood. It wasn't what originally started out to be. And opposite this group of houses or this development, the people that own that land are going to make half acre lots there. So it would be like the only portion of the street it would be completely different. So I just think it wouldn't fit the neighborhood. It's probably somebody just trying to make a little more money out of the land. And I can understand that, but just doesn't make sense. It wouldn't look right. If they set the houses back the same amount, they probably couldn't have 10,000 square foot lots. I just think it wouldn't look right.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Is it the zoning that's allowing this to go to happen, or?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Is it the zoning that's allowing this to happen?
No, this area was actually legally subdivided. Originally, they were supposed to be deep lots. The area across the street that he was referring to is actually going to be built the same way that this project is being proposed. Although they're not proposing building, they're just proposing to get legal lots for these. I have a map I can show you if you want, but those won't be.
If we're going to continue, it might as well hear it all at that same time. But I didn't want to waste somebody's time that who made the effort to be here this morning to be heard. So, thank you.
I can.
With that, Madam Chair, I move to continue this item as
second.
Proposed by staff.
All in favor? Yes.
Aye.
Opposed?
Would you mind?
On a date?
Gentlemen, it's October 18th.
Okay. Are you aware of that, sir, that we're continuing this item to October 18th date?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And we will alert everybody within the neighborhood about the hearing on October 18th, correct? Thank you.
And there was no one opposed to this, correct? Okay. It's been moved to October 18th. May we have an introduction of item C2, please?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider a request by resident-owned Parks, Inc. to approve borrowing of funds by the Housing Authority of the City of San Luis Obispo to enable resident-owned Parks, Inc. to purchase Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park and to approve a related joint powers agreement. And as you remember, we amended this item this morning to not continue it, but to move forward with the hearing and adopt a resolution.
Yes. May we have a staff report, please?
Thank you. Can you hear me all right?
guess I have it on. Dana Lilly with your planning department. As you know, the resident-owned parks is a nonprofit corporation that wishes to buy the park called Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park in Los Osos. It consists of 65 spaces. Resident-owned parks applied to the county earlier this year for some federal grant funds to be part of the financing for that, but they were not successful in obtaining those funds. As an alternative, resident-owned parks has struck a deal, you might say, with the Housing Authority of the City of San Luis Obispo. The Housing Authority is willing to issue tax-exempt bonds in order to make a loan to resident-owned parks in combination with a loan from the seller that will facilitate the purchase. Earlier, staff was recommending to continue this item because we wanted to look at additional details to ensure that there were no legal or financial liabilities for the county, that the deal was a feasible deal to accomplish. And we have done that, so we don't really see a need to continue it further. Also, since the county is not issuing bonds, it is not providing any direct financing, we determined that it wasn't necessary to bring this matter to the county's debt advisory committee either. Accordingly, the staff is recommending approval, and I'll go through a very brief further discussion. 73% of the residents do support the purchase. Conversely, that means 27% either oppose it or have not indicated they support it. Very briefly, some pros and cons of this purchase. The main con or the main downside is that resident-owned parks wishes to raise space rents from an average of about $322 a month to an average of $582 a month. It's our understanding that in order to accomplish that, they will need to enter into long-term leases with those mobile home owners. Even at $582, the space rent is not out of line compared to what is in the market in other areas. It probably could be considered a relatively affordable space rent for a coastal mobile home park. That's the primary downside that we see. There are a number of pros to this proposal. First of all, after that initial rent increase, according to the agreement that resident-owned parks has negotiated with the residents' organization, further rent increases in the future would be limited to no more than 3% per year, regardless of what the county's rent stabilization ordinance might allow. Also, and probably more important, is after 25 years, the loans should be fully paid off, and resident-owned parks will transfer ownership of the park to the residents' organization, which will be a nonprofit corporation at that time. On the face of it, it appears it will be transferred at that time debt-free, so it should be permanently affordable housing. Another positive aspect of this is no county funding, and as far as we can tell, no legal liability the county is not being asked to accept any of those. We are being asked indirectly to acknowledge that less than $800 a year in property taxes might be lost, not a significant amount. So finally, the 65 spaces which are occupied by mobile homes would be preserved as an affordable housing resource in Los Osos. And I should mention that the Los Osos Community Advisory Council recently did some public discussion of housing issues in their community, and one of their recommendations to the county was to do whatever it can to preserve existing affordable housing in Los Osos, since there will be limits on future development. To wrap up, staff previously had recommended continuance, but we've changed the recommendation to be that you approve this request, that you adopt the resolution that approves the tax-exempt bond financing by the Housing Authority, and that you enter into the joint exercise of powers agreement that will enable that to happen. I do see that a representative of resident-owned parks is here, a representative of the Housing Authority is here, and I believe someone from the bank is here in case you have questions of them or they wish to give testimony.
Thank you. I have one request to speak. so far, Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lilly, since our previously we were going to continue this item, and now it's a recommendation to hear it today and have a decision made, did we somehow misguide the public who wished to come and speak on this item, thinking that it's going to be continued?
I hope not. What it was noticed to do, and this was a hearing notice for today, so that was published in the paper, was to open the hearing and go ahead and take testimony today.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lilly, if this transaction goes forward, the residents that agreed to participate, does their rent change if they transfer ownership within the 25-year period of this agreement? In other words, can they sell their home and still maintain the terms of the agreement? Do you know? Is it transferable?
As I understand the agreement, yes. The agreement between resident-owned parks and the resident organization stipulates that resident-owned parks will not raise the rents more than 3% per year. Maurice Priest may want to emphasize that later if he has a chance.
One more, if I may.
Mr. Shajan.
Any liability to the county, or is this just a process that has to come through us?
While the auditor or county council may want to elaborate, I will say from the planning department side, we cannot see any liability in the joint powers agreement or your authorizing the issuance of tax-exempt bonds by the housing authority. They have done this kind of financing a number of times in the past.
Okay, I see no more names popping up.
We would basically agree with what Dana said, that it does not appear that the county would be exposing itself to liability by approving this deal.
And I would like to remind everyone up here, if you push that little green button twice, it turns yourself off. And I don't see your name come up. I have two requests to speak forms, so one gentleman can take one podium and the other gentleman take the next one, and that way we can save time. The first is Maurice Priest. The second is Mr. Kerry Simonson.
Madam Chair and members, Maurice Priest representing resident-owned parks.
And you have 3 minutes.
Okay. I want to thank Mr. Lilly and Mr. McNulty, Mr. Crawford, and Jack Seabach for their efforts on this, and especially clarifying the remaining issues that enabled them to recommend the approval today. With regard to Mr. Patterson's question, there will be no changes of rent to a buyer of a home that is sold in the park. The calculation of rent is based upon what our nonprofit needs to make the debt service and to pay for the proper operation and maintenance of the mobile home park. So our agreement with the residents is that they can enter into a sale of their home. Someone assumes, in effect, their payment. There will be an annual increase in rents of no more than 3%. There will be no change in rent upon resale of a home, as many of the mobile home parks currently impose, and really can wreak some financial hardships and problems for both the selling homeowner and to preserve affordability. So we've gone to great lengths to preserve all the affordability, to be sensitive to the people who have income restrictions. And the passage of the resolutions today were particularly important because it enables the bank that is behind the bonds, Los Padres Bank, Mr. Simonson, you'll hear from in a moment, but it enables them to significantly reduce the loan interest rate that would otherwise have applied. And so that's the importance. It's not that the county is issuing the bonds, but this, quote, TEFRA hearing, this resolution that approves it and says, yes, this is a good project, enables the bank to significantly reduce the interest rate. And that's what has enabled us to calculate the rents at 582 instead of something much greater had we been forced to go with a regular commercial rate loan. So we really appreciate your assistance and your consideration of a vote today so that we can go forward.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Simonson.
Do you want me to state my name and address?
Yes, please.
Kerry Simonson. I'm a vice president, regional loan officer with Los Padres Bank at 7315 El Camino Real, Atascadero. Los Padres Bank is anxious to do loans where we have community reinvestment lending, and especially with maintaining low-income housing. and this mobile home park at Sunny Oaks meets that criteria. The bank is the bank's loan committee is fully aware that total repayment of this loan will come from the revenues of the park itself. We're not expecting, or and we understand we won't expect any revenue from the county or any liability from the county.
Okay. And that concludes your comments?
Yes.
Thank you very much. With that, I will bring it closer to the public, bring it back to the board, and for discussion or a motion.
Do you want it approved?
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move staff's amended recommendation to go forward with this item.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It's a resolution now. Only because it's a resolution now. Sorry.
Okay. May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes, with pleasure. That concludes item C1. We will go to item C2, please. May we have an introduction? Item C3.
Item C3 is a hearing to consider the appeal by Helen Hale of the Planning Commission's endorsement of the request by Plains Exploration, PXP, for conditional use permit to expand oil production activities at the Price Canyon oil field located east and west of Pismo Creek, approximately 3 miles northeast of the city of Pismo Beach, midway between Highway 101 and Highway 227, D010386D, 3rd District. This item is continued from June 28, 2005. Recommendations for denial of the appeal and approval of the conditional use permit.
Thank you. Ellen Carroll, environmental coordinator. We do have an additional...
Is your mic on?
No. I'm sorry. Ellen Carroll, environmental coordinator. Good morning. This is a continued item. There's been quite a bit of activity between the last hearing and this hearing today. As late as yesterday, we received some additional information, and so we've prepared a memo for your board that we're going to hand out to you today, and Keith Miller, in making his presentation, will go over that for you. And with that, I think I'll just turn this over to Keith and have him go ahead and make the presentation.
Mr. Miller.
Push the bottom on the
face of the microphone. There you go.
Testing. Thank you, board members. Keith Miller, County Planning. What I thought I'd do is go through my initial presentation first and then do some of the housekeeping issues and go through that memo following my presentation. The proposed project is located on Price Canyon Road between Highway 227 and the city of Pismo Beach. The oil field has been in operation since about 1906, and between then and 1980, roughly 129 oil wells were drilled. In 1982, the Board of Supervisors approved a conceptual master plan for this oil field. The field currently produces about 1,900 barrels of oil per day. This next slide is an aerial photo showing the Phase 4 boundary. Steve is going to point out the railroad tracks. Price Canyon Road, just to the west of those railroad tracks. Highway 227 would be on the north end of this photo, and the city of Pismo Beach would be a few miles to the southern end of this photo. The proposed Phase 4 project includes the construction of 95 production wells, 30 steam injection wells, 3 steam generators, and is expected to increase production at the field to approximately 5,000 barrels of oil per day. This slide shows a recent timeline for this project. The Planning Commission approved the project in September of 2004. In October, the department received an appeal. In response to some of the issues that were raised in the appeal, staff and the consultant prepared an EIR addendum. This was done in spring of 2005. On June 28th, the appeal hearing was here before your Board of Supervisors. We were almost there. Your board directed staff to work with the applicant and the regulatory agencies to hammer out a couple of details in the groundwater monitoring plan. Over the past few weeks, we've done that, and the monitoring plan that's included in your board package is the final proposed plan. In addition to the monitoring plan issue, two other issues have been raised since the June 28th hearing. They include a concern from a nearby resident of the project that environmental mitigations have been inconsistently applied. The other issue is that traffic impacts haven't been adequately addressed. This proposed project and the proposed mitigation were reviewed by the Department of Fish and Game. And while staff can't speak directly for the department, we can point out some differences between this project and the one described in the letter that he received. The proposed project does not propose a taking of Pismocarchia, which is a federally endangered species. The other project mentioned in the letter you received was an enforcement case in which it was determined that there were previous impacts to the Pismocarchia in the past, and impacts could occur in the future. In addition, the proposed project requires that annual surveys for Pismocarchia be performed each spring to map the populations. This way, the precise locations of the well pads can be adjusted as necessary to avoid disturbing the populations. Lastly, the oil field, while an intensive operation, is only a temporary use, and once the operation is complete, the site will be reclaimed and is proposed to use as grazing or open space. The residential development that was proposed on Ormondi Road would be permanent. Finally, the City of Pismo Beach is requesting that the county require the applicant to fund a study that would determine potential traffic impacts from the to the City of Pismo Beach resulting from the increase in truck trips generated from this project. The EIR that was prepared for this project evaluated the impacts of the increased traffic and determined that the impacts would be insignificant. Because of some safety concerns near the entrance to the oil field, the project was prohibited from generating more truck traffic trips during the AM and PM rush hours. This will indirectly help minimize the impacts within the City of Pismo Beach as well. So staff is recommending you adopt the resolution denying the appeal and approving the conditional use permit, and that you certify the proposed environmental impact report along with some of the conditions in the memo. So if you turn to the memo that Ellen just handed out, as far as the recommended action goes, rather than Exhibit 1, Exhibit 2, and Exhibit 3, they're actually Exhibit A, Exhibit B, and Exhibit C. Condition number 35 in Mitigation Measure Hazard 1D, there's some additional language that describes who should be reviewing a contingency plan mentioned in the Environmental Impact Report. Condition number 41 changes a couple of shoulds to the word shall. It also mentions that the spill prevention and contingency control plan needs to be submitted to the Department of Planning and Building. Mitigation measure GO3 has been changed to reflect condition number 29, which is the one that describes the well monitoring program. Some additional language has been added to Exhibit C, the CEQA findings, as well. We've also included four additional letters that we've received into the record portion of Exhibit C. And just recently, as far as the transportation impacts in the City of Pismo Beach, the applicant and Pismo Beach recognize that their neighbors, they've worked out an agreement to deal with potential maintenance issues on the City of Pismo Beach streets. And so staff would like to recommend a condition number 43 for this project. I'd like to read that into the record. It's not part of your package right now. Condition number 43 would read, prior to issuance of the first notice to proceed or grading permit, the applicant shall provide evidence of payment to the City of Pismo Beach that provides $1,000 per year contribution for the first 5 years of operation and $2,500 per year for the following 15 years to fund its fair share of maintenance and replacement costs associated with the use of Pismo City streets. And with that, concludes my presentation, and we are available for any questions.
Yeah, Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that condition on page C33. Since we are putting the dollar amounts in there, is there still a use to use the word fair share if it has been designated, or that is their share then, and otherwise?
That represents their fair share.
Because what I'm thinking, a fair share, somebody might come back later on and say, is there their fair share or not? If there has been an agreement between the city and the applicant, I'd rather see that that amount is their share, period.
Supervisor Shajian, that's the term that we've been using to recognize that a project's kind of incremental contribution. It, instead of just leaving the dollars as you're going to contribute this amount, it kind of recognizes that this is for that incremental contribution towards traffic into the city. I think we would recommend keeping it in that condition because it kind of memorializes what the intent of those dollars is for rather than just kind of a set amount that everybody came up with.
Understood.
I see no other speakers. Request or questions? Excuse me while I get my paper stuff up here put away. This is an appeal, and ordinarily we allow 10 minutes for the appellant, but because this is a continued appeal, I will allow the appellant 5 minutes, and then the applicant 5 minutes, public 3 minutes each, come back to the applicant for three minutes, and the appellant for 3 minutes. So, with that, and please state your name for the record.
Certainly. Good morning, Chairperson Bianchi, members of the board. My name is Rachel Covesdi. I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant. And first and foremost, we would like to thank you very much for giving our concerns about the groundwater in Price Canyon the consideration that those issues deserve. Your actions at the June 28th hearing afforded us the opportunity to work with the applicants, regulatory agencies, and experts to fashion a groundwater monitoring plan, which goes a long way toward protecting the water resources of Price Canyon. The direction given by your board, as well as the leadership role taken by Supervisor Lenthal, brought all parties to the table in a good faith effort to reach consensus. We also appreciate the language added to the project approval in conditions 35 and 41 concerning wastewater disposal and spill notification, respectively. And although we are still concerned, given the lack of evidence supporting PXP's wastewater disposal capacity and the contradictory statements by PXP and Dogger regarding that disposal capacity, that Phase 4 development plan and PXP's wastewater pipeline project have been artificially segmented, staff has endeavored through these conditions to require the pipeline project to have an appropriate CEQA determination. We're hopeful that the pipeline project, which may export as much as 3,600 acre-feet of water per year out of the Pismo Creek watershed, will undergo a transparent public review process. We look forward to participating in that process and have asked that Public Works and planning staff provide notices regarding the pipeline project to us as an interested party and contact us when the environmental document is released. Again, we're truly appreciative of the board's time and consideration, as well as the work done by county staff and regulatory agency personnel during this process. Thank you very much, and we're available for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I see no names pop up, so with that, the applicant.
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Steve Rush, and I'm Vice President of Environmental Health and Safety for Plains Exploration and Production Company. And I promised that I was going to be short today, so I will be. I do have to read a few things into the record, however, due to the fact that the appeal wasn't withdrawn. I'm sure you can understand that. What I'd like to do is read, and I'm passing them to you here, is I want to enter into the record that July 15th, 2005 email from John King to Greg Wagner that sets forth demands for the Hale appeal withdrawal. A July 22nd, 2005 email from myself, Steve Rush, to Keith Miller, Ms. Carroll, and the county planners addressing King's request for conditions limiting exportation of water. A July 22nd, 2005 email from myself to Supervisor Lenthal addressing issues regarding the monitoring program and Pismo's traffic concerns. And also a July 22nd, 05 letter from Greg Wagner to John King responding to his July 15th letter demands for withdrawal of appeal. So I just wanted to get those into the record. I believe they have been, but just to double check. And on the issue that Rachel brought up concerning the capacity of the injection program, a couple comments. One, it's not conflicting statements. We're withdrawing, as an example, we're withdrawing 10 barrels of fluid out of the ground. A barrel is oil, and 9 barrels is water. So my math would say 10 minus 9 is 1. 9 goes back into the ground, which leaves actually additional void to put left in the ground. So every time we produce oil, we're creating a void in the ground. We're reinjecting the rest of that water at the present time. There was no conflict in the DOGGR's statements. The capacity that they were talking about was the capacity of a different sand. It ended up being too thin, and we rejected that program. We are continuing to inject water in those in the oil-bearing zone that I talked about, so there is absolutely no concern with capacity for that system. It's a matter of efficiency. Obviously, you don't want to be injecting where you're producing the oil and trying to heat it up with the steam, but it's not an issue of capacity. So I just wanted to set the record straight that that's not an issue. And lastly, I wanted to mention that we've had a flurry of activity in talking to the city of Pismo recently, and I think we've reached a reasonable conclusion to those discussions because they did have concerns. We are their neighbors, as we are yours, and our intent was to address their issues. Enough said, I think we've got a good condition to do that. And with that, after 10 months, I think PXP is ready for a vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. With that, I will open it to the general public, and one speaker can take one microphone and the other speaker the next speaker the other microphone. So the first speaker is Mary Ann Reese, and the second speaker is Arlene Gonzalez-G.
Madam Chair and members of the board, you recently received a letter from me as the mayor of the city of Pismo Beach, representing the full city council and the citizens of Pismo Beach. We expressed our concerns about the increased traffic on our city streets with the expansion of the PXP operations. We ask that the board add as a condition of approval that the traffic study be amended to include an investigation of the project's impact on traffic and the pavement condition of the streets in the city of Pismo Beach. Since that time, the city manager has had some discussions with one of the vice presidents, Mr. Rush, at PXP, and they have indicated a willingness to be a good neighbor and to compensate the city for the traffic, how the traffic would affect the condition of our streets. And it seems like it would be a reasonable contribution for the city. However, we still have concerns about the number of trucks that will be added. There'll be 750 new traffic trucks going through the city per month. Those are double tankers, and we're concerned about how it'll affect the traffic. But we have indicated that we would concur with the amount of money that they're willing to contribute to the city, and we'll resolve part of those issues that way. And we thank them very much for their willingness to work with us and for the board's reasonableness in this project. Sorry, I got a little bit nervous there. But it appears we've come to some conclusion that's satisfactory to the city, and we're willing to go along with that. That doesn't mean that we aren't concerned about the extra traffic. There are double tankers coming through the city. It will affect our traffic, and we do have a new project possibly coming up, and that's the extension of the Price Street. The extension of the Price Street. So that's all I have. If you have any questions, I'm willing to answer those. And we also have our associate civil engineer here if you have any questions at all.
I see no names pop up here, so
Okay. Apparently
there are no questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Gonzalez-G.
Honorable Madam Chair and board members, I'm Arlene Gonzalez-G, Mayor Pro Tem of Pismo Beach. And I had spoke to a couple of you concerning Condition 43. It seems the city of Pismo Beach has somewhat come to an agreement on Condition 43. I just wanted to voice my concerns on the traffic of this proposed project. Should the Price Street extension come to pass, as you know, we're in a resort community, and those trucks will be on our city streets during dinner time. I think large trucks coming down the middle of our community at dinner time it brings on a safety issue. And I pray that you would consider those peak hours in the evenings, and that's on page 15
It's C315, Traffic and Circulation, number 9. It says no increase in truck trips will occur during AM and PM peak periods. However, from 4 to 6, I believe dinner time starts around 6 o'clock in our community, and maybe you could consider changing those hours to include dinner time. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have no more requests to speak forms from the public. So I will close it to the general public, and the applicant has 3 minutes to respond to anything that was said. If you wish to, you don't wish to. Okay. The applicant has 3 minutes, and they don't wish to. So I do have a question before we have a motion. On the subject of exporting water from one basin to another, and this is for council, exporting water from one basin to another, doesn't that require a permit from the State Water Resources Control Board, which is a public process?
That's something we'd have to take a look at. We don't know the answer to that question right now. So if you'd like us to take a look at it, we can get back to you.
No, it was just to assuage some of the concerns of the appellant. I have to stop and figure who's the applicant, who's the appellant here. That was all. So, I mean, they're perfectly capable of looking it up.
I have a question.
Somebody turn on a light. Okay, Mr. Pattern is first, then Mr. Shajan.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a minute to thank our planning staff for their last-minute massaging of all the information that came in and putting a proposal together that we could act on this morning. So thank you all for your – I know you were working late on this one, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Most people who are heading south from San Luis in the afternoon are after 5 o'clock when they're – work is done, and wouldn't it be more appropriate, as Ms. Gonzalez G put it to us, be instead of 4 to 6, be 5 to 7:30? Does that create a problem to you, Mr. Rush?
Change it from 4 to 6
to 5
to
7?
You have to come to the microphone. I'm sorry. We need you on the record.
Instead of 4 to 6, let's say 5 to 7:30, does that create a problem?
Yeah, I think the original, just on, the original request to go to.
I'm sorry, you have to give your name again.
Steve Rush with Plains Exploration Production. The original request to go from, I guess, 4 to 8 starts to impact our ability to store enough oil on site to get it out. If we extend it from 5 to 7:30, kind of looking at the guy that has to truck the oil out, and it's just a half an hour longer, that would probably be acceptable.
Okay, then I would suggest to the motion maker that the rush, the PM peak hour be 5 to 7:30.
But is that acceptable to the city?
Yes.
Okay, well, with that, there are no more questions or comments, so I would entertain a motion from whoever district this is.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'd like to entertain a motion and also make note of the changes or amendments with the hours, especially the afternoon hours, that Mr. Rush agreed to. Before I make my motion, I think it's important to understand that while it's always nice to get thanks, and I appreciate both the appellant and the applicant giving thanks to the board, as Supervisor Patterson early stated, we had a lot of people in county staff that worked a lot of hours in this. Some of these hours were after 5 o'clock. Some of these meetings were not convenient. And I think it's appropriate at this time to publicly recognize the people that actually went the extra mile, in my judgment, especially in the last 30 days. And I'll start with Keith Miller, Steve McMasters, John Nall, and Ellen Carroll from our Planning Department Environmental Division. Also, Lori Salo and Kurt Baston from Environmental Health, Richard Marshall from Public Works, Jenny McCarthy from Environmental Health, Chris Vardis from Padre Consultants, and Jerome Sutherland from Padre Consultants. Also, I think it's important in something this complex, especially for myself, to recognize Lou Rosenberg, our county geologist, for making some of the difficult things simple for a layman to understand. Oftentimes, I think we get criticized in government for being process-driven and not service-driven. And I think this is a good example where a lot of people came together that had many questions, comments, and concerns, and came up with a better product through this discussion. And so I'm very pleased that after the 30 days that we were able to resolve as many things as we did and move that we approve this project.
May we have a roll call, please?
Okay, so let me just make sure. You're denying the appeal. You're adopting the resolution with all the changes that staff read into from their memo, including the addition of condition 43 and the change to condition number 9.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. That concludes our morning hearing, except now we open it to the public for closed session comments. And I have two requests to speak forms. The first is John Snyder. The second is Eric Greening. So you each get a microphone.
Good job.
Yes. Mr. Snyder, you have 3 minutes.
Right, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is John Snyder. I'm from Napomo. Once again, I wanted to make a few updates on the Santa Maria groundwater litigation. I wanted to note that only 10 more acres in San Luis Obispo has signed the agreement and posted it on the website. I'm not sure whether that's in the valley or up on the mesa. San Maria and Cal City still have not posted a signed agreement.
Excuse me, Mr. Snyder. I'll give you more time. Would the people leaving the room please keep quiet? Thank you. I'll give you more time.
Thank you. The original deadline to sign the agreement was September 7th. It has now been extended to September 2nd. Third, I supplied you with a fax outlining a change to the settlement on August 3rd. The purveyors have been released from the requirement to place their land's title under the settlement. This was done in a manner that would be like this board voting on a project with conditions and then having someone insert additional conditions into the minutes that were not considered by the board. When the board approves the minutes without making any changes to those would be incorporated into the actual project. That would be outrageous and dishonest, and this was done just like that in this settlement. Fourthly, we've been told repeatedly that the state pipeline capacity is 100% used, completely allocated, and there's no possible way of any extra space. There's been a major change in that in terms of the state pipeline. Dwayne Chisholm from the City of Santa Maria Public Works in a city council meeting in Santa Maria yesterday afternoon announced that the CCWA has done a study of actual pipe flow and that there's 5,000 acre feet of additional real capacity over the DWR's original theoretical design numbers in the pipe from the origin down to the Santa Maria turnout. This is a major change in the possibilities for water in Napomo and the need for a pipeline across the river. Only a much smaller NCSD voted against state water. A much larger number of landowners in Napomo did not have a chance yet to vote. The board should not sign this settlement and lock Napomo into any plan until some of these additional things can be considered. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have on my facts or on my comments here today.
I see no lights pop. Mr. Shajian.
I did share this, thank you, Madam Chair, with Mr. Snyder, that our board and our council has looked at your concerns. They've been forwarded to the county attorney hired to look into this affair for a response.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Greening.
I'm Eric Greening and mostly addressing item number one, but I have to comment on item number two. It has been something that's sort of been on the back burner for a long time to discuss whether this county would actually participate on a director level in the Central Coast Water Authority. And I guess one more surprise coming across the county line that we're just hearing about at second hand says that maybe that should be on our agenda again to discuss, particularly given how much is crossing the county line in both ways, both in relation to discussions and possibly in relation to wet water. In any event, my comment on number one, Los Osos Community Services District versus Julie Roldewald, obviously, since you're going into closed session, I don't know exactly what you're discussing, but I just want to provide a general comment in relation to the election process, that it's always valuable for any decision-making body to know what the people's opinion is, whether it is a binding vote or a non-binding vote. There have been a number of instances, both on a statewide basis and in various local governments, where votes have been held. They have been later found, the proposition has later been found invalid for one reason or another. But nonetheless, the public has had the opportunity through the balloting process to express its opinion. And I think, given that there is an election scheduled anyway, given that this is a question of how many items will be on the ballot rather than whether there will be an election and the expense of an election, I certainly would hope that whether this is found binding or not, the community will have the chance to express itself on every issue that is possible to put in front of it. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. With that, I said that I would give the telephone number for chemically sensitive people to call and register once again, so I assume everyone in the radio and TV audience has their pencil and piece of paper handy, and the number is 781-5910. That's 781-5910. With that, we will go into closed session, and I'm not sure how long will this last.
All the way through lunch.
20 minutes.
We should probably talk about that in closed session, but I understand that overall it will be several hours.
Okay, then we will return at 2 o'clock with some statement as to what we're doing. Okay, with that, we'll see you whenever.